ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What if the thing that makes you an expert in your field is the very factor that might be holding you back at work? Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. You spent your working life deepening your knowledge and skill set, but in this episode, you'll hear that the more you know, the more you can become blind to fresh insight and data. Leadership and culture expert Dr. Kirsten Ferguson looks at this in her new book called Blind Spotting: How to See What Others Miss. If you've uncovered blind spots in your work or in your life, what were they? And how did you overcome them? You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Hello, Kirsten.
Hi, Lisa.
What is the problem that you're seeking to solve with your exploration of blind spotting?
Well, let's start with the first big blind spot that many people have is believing they don't have any blind spots at all.
That sounds a little bit familiar there. What do we do with that?
Well, I think it's that honesty that the fact is we're human. So we've all got these biases and baggage that we bring to every decision we're making, every conversation we might be having. Success is a huge blind spot. It can bring hubris. So we think, oh, we've done this before. We did it really well. I'm going to nail it again this time. And as we all know, often that can be the trap we fall into.
That's a big word, hubris, but how does that come about? Let's go deeper into the success factor then.
Yeah, well, there's something called the curse of expertise that I think would apply to many people listening, which is this idea, it's a, sort of the corollary to the Dunning-Kruger effect, which I'm sure everyone has heard of, where, you know, people with very little knowledge think they are very knowledgeable on a whole range of things. And by the way, this is also us. We all fall into this at certain times. The curse of expertise is kind of the opposite, where those of us with really deep experience and understanding of a topic, we fall into the trap of obviously understanding a great deal and knowing with certainty what we know, but we're worse than others at knowing when we should doubt. And that is the mind trap that we fall into. Because we're not prepared to doubt what we know, it becomes a very big blind spot in and of itself.
I think one of the dangers which I found really interesting reading about in your book is not only do you become an expert in your own field, but there is a term called epistemic trespassing.
Isn't that awesome?
It's so awesome. Do you want to go into this?
Oh, my goodness. And I just cringe when I think of the number of times I have epistemically trespassed. But some well-known examples were during COVID. And in fact, you know, when everyone had an opinion on how we could all become epidemiologists. But there was a case of a Nobel Prize winner who'd won his Nobel Prize for, look, I can't recall, but let's say physics, and then suddenly was giving views on what kind of treatment was going to be most effective in dealing with COVID. And he was, you know, pilloried for that. And we saw journalists having views. We saw all sorts of people who are not experts. So, yeah, the idea of epistemic trespassing, which is, you know, not the most easy to remember name, but it's basically talking about stuff you shouldn't be talking about and you're not an expert in.
What is intellectual humility? Why is it important?
Oh, it's so important because it's being able to accept we've all got intellectual limits. So if you think of our knowledge on a spectrum, and on one end you have those intellectually arrogant people who think they know everything, you know, it's just infuriating working with those people. But again, put the mirror up because we all do it. At the other end of the spectrum is where you're so crippled by the idea that you know nothing, you know, and you think, oh, I'm not in the right place. I don't know how to handle it. Intellectual humility or blind spotting, and we'll talk about that, that's this sweet spot in the middle where I can accept I don't know everything at all, but I'm actually okay with that because that's life. Life is changing so quickly. Even in my area of expertise, I can't possibly know everything, and I'm not going to know tomorrow what I thought was sure yesterday. And so this idea of intellectual humility is being confident in not knowing everything and being totally okay with that as well. That's really, you know, what I sort of try and define, this idea of being seekers as opposed to knowers, knowers who feel they know everything. We want to be seekers, really looking to find the truth.
Why now? Why do we need to be seekers?
I think the world is changing so quickly. As we came through as leaders and what I learnt, you know, early in my career, I was almost taught to sort of get this deep knowledge and put it in a box, and that's the foundation on which, you know, you really learn and succeed. Whereas now I think the most effective leaders are those who can learn but then unlearn, because technology is different, the way the world is operating is different, the geopolitical environment is different, the economic context we're operating in is different. And so we need to be able to unlearn and then pivot. So that is a whole new way of learning and leading.
You have a whole book of cautionary tales, but people are being very generous sharing their stories. Can you pick one out for us, though, so we can sort of get our heads around why we really need to be a seeker maybe and hold being a knower lightly?
There's an excellent example around the UK post office scandal, and that's a case of a whole company, a whole culture failing to engage in blind spotting. And just very briefly, it's where, and for anyone who hasn't seen the UK Post Office versus Mr. Bates, it's a fantastic dramatisation of it. But basically, the Post Office saw some errors in their accounting system, and they decided that these almost retiree people who were running the local post offices, the postmasters, were conducting fraud and engaging in accounting irregularities. And they sent hundreds of them to jail. Turns out, of course, they weren't stealing from the post office. It was actually an error in the accounting software. You know, who would think, Lisa, that IT could, you know, go wrong? But the blind spot was that once the post office started to think it can't be the IT, it must be the postmasters, they just doubled down in this prosecution of hundreds and hundreds of people, and it led to awful, awful outcomes for these postmasters.
So can we have your official definition of blind spotting, please, Kirsten?
Oh, goodness. Well, really, it's just a way of being honest, being curious, and being flexible about what we do and how we see ourselves in the world. And if we use those mindsets, and if I can talk about being honest, that's really touching on this intellectual humility idea. It's really looking in the mirror and being honest about the limits of what we know. It's disentangling our egos. So if you're someone who really defines yourself as, I'm going to pick on a lawyer, you know, if you are a lawyer and that's how you define yourself, then if someone is perhaps giving you feedback on your ability to be a lawyer, you're likely to become much more defensive. Whereas if you just see yourself as someone who's professional, who likes helping other people and, you know, using advice to do that, then you're able to distance yourself. So that's really about being honest with ourselves and hopefully also with others, that idea of being able to say, I don't know yet. The second is then being curious, and that's really looking for the objective truth. And we need to be really looking for that. And we can do that by seeking out different perspectives. Often many of our blind spots are filled because we're just talking to like-minded people. We're not actually going out and finding someone who vehemently disagrees with us and then genuinely being curious. Why? Like, what am I missing here? Why is it you think this is such a bad idea? And then finally, being flexible. None of this is valuable if you aren't prepared to have an open mind and hold your convictions lightly. So all three really only work if you do them together. You need to be honest, be curious, and be flexible.
Let's drill down then and get practical in terms of these categories. So in terms of being honest then, you have a number of questions that leaders can ask themselves before making a decision. Do you want to run through a few of them? One of my favourites is, what evidence would genuinely make me change my mind? It's such a good question.
Exactly. So you're going into a situation where, you know, and I can think of times where I've been a CEO, I've sat on boards, we've got a big decision we've got to make, but I don't know that I ever asked myself, like, what do I need to think about that would make me not do this? And we all get caught up in that momentum. Often you look back and think, oh, if only I, you know, really asked myself what would have stopped me from doing this, because often that's the thing that will come and really bite you.
And often in those situations, it's about how might I be able to share my views and perspectives so people can hear them and maybe even convince people of my view?
And this is where we can learn a lot from scientists. They start with a hypothesis. And I think we can all be doing that in our relationships and at work, where we're not going in with this really fixed position. So I've sat on boards for 15 years, and the best directors really come in with a view, but they're prepared to hear others' perspectives and change their view once they get more information. And we all need to be doing that.
Another question that I think is really useful is, what might I be missing?
I think the more sure you are about something, the more that question is needed, because it's impossible for you to be someone that's thought of everything. And I think if you are someone who supervises a team or works in a team environment, the more certain you are, the more you really need to remind yourself to ask others, what am I missing? And as a leader, it doesn't reduce your credibility at all. It, in fact, builds trust and respect. And it shows those you're working with that you value their contribution. So it's a really important way to also build psychological safety.
And I think it's a really generous question, actually, because if you turn to someone in your team and say, what do you think? I feel like that puts a lot of pressure on people. Whereas if you gently say, what am I missing? That is actually an invitation to say what I'm actually missing.
This is all about what we can control. This is not about other people or how, you know, we want them to act. This is about the questions we need to ask that get us to reflect. So you're spot on. Inviting someone to say, what is it I'm not seeing, is really making it about you. And then that opens up all sorts of other feedback conversations that you can be having. So it's a great entry point.
Okay, I want to cover something which can be quite difficult, which is saying, I don't know. So should we go into this?
Yeah. I mean, I have had people say to me, and it's four words. For me, this is about saying, I don't know yet. Saying, you know, if I'm a leader and I'm like, I don't know. Well, you know, that's hardly very effective. So let's get it right that we're talking about a tone of like genuine curiosity. I don't know yet, but I'm going to find out. There are some people who have said to me, look, if I said that in my organisation, I'd lose my job. To those people I say, there are a lot of other issues going on. It's not a psychologically safe workplace, because I can assure you as a leader, I want people to tell me if they don't know, you know, rather than sitting at their desk trying to figure it out themselves. And so if you don't feel you can say that, that is a real challenge. I'm asking, though, to trust that I think if you can, in many situations, express that this is something you haven't dealt with before, or that this is something you've got some parts of the puzzle to, but you know that you, Lisa, you've got a whole nother skill set. Together, we've got this nailed, but, you know, we need to work together on it. There is something to clarify. So I talk about this idea of seekers and knowers. There's a time and a place. You have to be able to read the room. So, you know, in a crisis, and I've certainly led in a crisis a number of times before, it is no good staying, look, I don't know yet how we're going to deal with this, if what is needed then and there to galvanize everyone in a direction is to say, here is what we're going to do, follow me, I'm, you know, feeling confident we can sort this. If you are a surgeon, I'm not sure I really want to hear that you don't know how you're going to take my appendix out, but you'll have a good shot. Or if you're defending me for murder in a court case, you know, I'd rather know that you know what you're doing. So we really have to be able to read the room, but for the majority of cases when we are just interacting at work, being prepared to say, look, I don't know yet, but let's figure it out. Just using a brief example, someone this week told me they were in an organisation that's going through redundancies, and they had asked their boss, you know, what's going to happen to our team and, you know, am I going to be affected? And they said, look, I don't know yet. And for that person, it was actually reassuring, because they knew that had they tried to give them some pat answer, they knew that wasn't the truth. There was no answers yet. This was coming from a multinational. No one actually knew what was going to happen. And so it sounds counterintuitive, but having your leader be honest with you is exactly what is needed in those times.
In your experience, and I know you coach many people, do people who are maybe even in a minority at work, would they find it harder, do you think, to say, I don't know, or I don't know yet, because of the where they're positioned in the organisation and having to not be as vulnerable.
Yeah, I think it depends on the culture of the organisation. So I've spoken to very junior and very senior people who work in the tech industry or the science industry where they come with that hypothesis idea. And they're like, why is this even a thing? Like, we all sit in meetings the whole time going, I don't know, which kind of makes me laugh as well. But it opens that blue sky thinking of like, well, let's figure it out together. There's other cultures of organisations I've spoken to where, yeah, there's this clear, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine saying that. But I interview the CEO of Xero in the book, Sukhinder Singh Cassidy, and she talks about an example of when she became the CEO of a new organisation and she was asked a question very early, you know, as a brand new leader, what was she going to do about something? And she told the whole organisation, I don't know yet. And that was perfect because she just arrived, you know. And so the opposite of that is those leaders that on day one start saying, this is what I've observed from the outside and so I'm going to do X, Y and Z. And you know that feeling of like, oh, you haven't even walked in the door yet. So I think that would have set a tone in that organisation from a brand new leader that this is okay, that it's quite natural and, in fact, quite appropriate to be able to say, I don't know, at certain times.
Let's work on being curious. And I guess at the heart of this, it is about asking good questions, but not all questions are created equal here. So what's the best way to ask a question as a leader? And I'm thinking tone has got something to do with it.
Exactly. There is an art to questions, but for me, I think they're probably the most powerful tool we have as leaders. And, you know, I can think of a time where sadly I've had to terminate someone's employment when I was a CEO and got their completely using questions, because you can ask really effective, empathetic questions that help someone else come to the view that you're already at yourself. And by the end of the conversation, they said to me, well, I think perhaps, you know, this isn't the place for me. Yes. Okay. That's probably, you know, I think we probably agree on that. What I talk about is this need to ask questions for insight as opposed to win. And I think we can all fall into the trap of backing someone into a corner and really wanting to prove your point. That is not being curious. That is being a QC or a KC in an organisation just trying to win every battle. We want to be asking questions where we're genuinely curious. We don't want to be firing them off 100 miles an hour so the poor person, even though you're curious, feels like they're being
interrogated.
But you want to be able to use questions that are genuine, you listen, and you're really prepared to be flexible based on what you hear. So when if you ask for feedback and someone gives you some, you know, great feedback, you're genuinely curious and say, tell me more about that. That is a blind spot I've got. I had no idea I was doing that. Please, can you tell me more? Because I really want to understand. And so I think questions can be a way to open up an incredible empowering for the people that you lead, that they feel that you really are interested in them and their contributions.
So part three of the approach about being flexible, it's one of those things, again, where you feel like you are being flexible, but really that sense of wanting to control things gets in the way. So what are your practical tips here for maybe practicing bringing more flexibility into our lives?
Yeah, and we become so invested in what we believe that the idea of unlearning can be hard. Yet it's so powerful when you do. And you don't have to change your mind on everything. But I think when you have been honest that you don't know everything, then you've been curious and you've gone and found the answer, you really can't turn your back on that then if you've now got data or evidence that shows you really need to adjust your thinking.
Your book and your website includes a self-assessment tool leaders and others can use to identify their blind spots. Do you want to tell us about that?
For my last book, Head and Heart, something like 33,000 odd people have come and done the scale I created with a university there. And I've done the same for blind spotting. So if people go to blindspotting.com.au, they will find a scale. There's only 26 questions. It's all completely confidential. But you'll get a personalised report about how well you're doing at your blind spots.
So producer Michelle put herself on the line and she's done the self-assessment and you have her survey in front of you, Dr. Kirsten Ferguson.
I love it. It's not at all surprising to see that she's incredibly curious.
So, yes, you know, perfect for a producer.
Interestingly, if we look at it, one of the areas where Michelle and all of us can work on is around accepting our intellectual limits and disentangling our egos. And that's because no doubt Michelle is incredibly proud to be doing what she's doing in media. And my results are somewhat similar to that. And it's just this awareness that the ego can be a barrier for us to really be open to feedback on how we're doing in our areas of skill and expertise that we're so proud of. But I can see on her report that questioning for insight, Michelle, is another area. We all fall into the trap of making sure that we are really being curious rather than asking a lot of questions to really find out more and then tell me more and tell me more. There's some fascinating research about asking too many questions can be a real barrier for leaders, because you do feel at times where you've had a leader who thinks they're doing the right thing, but there's so many, you're being bombarded and it can be overwhelming. So questions are a funny art to get right.
I guess to summarise then, what would the benefits be for leaders of taking a blind spotting approach? What have you seen?
One thing we should really focus on and mention is that while we've been talking about individuals, I'm a firm believer that you can create blind spotting cultures. And so leaders who recruit for seekers, and I write about how you can go and recruit for seekers, questions you can ask in, you know, interviews to try and see how intellectually humble someone is, how prepared they are to have their views challenged. That means from boards down, we need to be really thinking about blind spotting. And I open and close the book with the story of NVIDIA. And most people would have heard of them. They're an AI powerhouse now. But when they first started, they very nearly collapsed. They were in graphics cards, you know, back in the day when there was the old Nintendo consoles and things. They backed the wrong horse and now they were rendering images and very nearly collapsed. And they were able to get out of that through being intellectually honest. And intellectual honesty is now one of the five corporate values of NVIDIA. And they're the only company I've found that has that. And it has been since sort of day one of survival for the last 30 years. And I think it's a real testimony that you can create whole organisations that are really actively blind spotting, and it's going to help you collaborate, be more innovative, and create psychologically safe workplaces.
Thanks so much, Kirsten. Dr. Kirsten Ferguson is an expert in leadership and culture and author of Blind Spotting: How to See What Others Miss. Next up, try this. On Try This, we give you the hacks and suggestions that you can use to make your work life better. And we ask you to report back as well. Dr. Kirsten Ferguson is now going to share her top two tips on how to practice blind spotting. Over to you, Kirsten.
Here's the challenge for everyone. Find an opportunity this week to say, I don't know yet. And I want you to be confident in that and not use a tone of, I don't know yet. It's like, look, I don't know yet, but we're going to figure it out. And this is how, you know, I think we can go about learning it. So go and practice and see what the response is when you say, I don't know yet. The second thing I want you to do, especially if you're a leader, is to go into your next team meeting or whatever and just use questions. Don't try and fill the space, you know, with your answers. You are just going to ask some great questions and let others do the talking and see what you learn.
So why don't you try this and let us know how you go? You can report back by emailing or sending a voice memo to thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. And you can catch more insights about work in the latest episode of Quick Smart with Siobhan Marin. Siobhan and I talk about ways of working that prevent burnout, and we talk through This Working Life guest Cal Newport's slow productivity approach. It's available on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. And if you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app and tap the heart to follow all of our stories. This episode was produced by producer Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Melbourne. Until next time, love your work.
There's a lot to keep up with. And that's where QuickSmart comes in. Each week, I chat with my cleverest colleagues about all the things you've been wondering. Like, are dictators taking over the world? When did all our clothes become plastic? And what's actually in this non-alcoholic beverage I'm holding? Just give me, Siobhan Marin, 10 minutes each week. I'll be quick, you'll be smarter. It's Quick Smart. Find us on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.